Down to Business on Newstalk.
Thanks to Bank of Ireland, helping you deal with the business of Brexit.
So continuing our chats with this year's finalists of the EY Entrepreneur of the Year Awards, we're going to talk about the B word, yes? That's Brexit. I have three people well-placed to discuss it. I'm delighted to be joined now by finalists Paul Fitzgibbon. He's from the Ardrí Group down there, based in Tralee in Kerry. Ashley McCullough of McCullough Ireland Limited. He's a finalist from last year. And also Simon McAllister, the EY Brexit lead. And a very good morning to you all.
Good morning, Bobby.
Good morning.
Paul, I might start with you, if I may. Just the Ardrí Group, it's a fantastic business. You're in the affordable homeware products. You're around for 31 years. The business is based in Kerry, but you've got substantial operations in both the UK and China. So maybe just you might talk about where you're at now as we speak in a very ever-changing, very fast-moving place around Brexit. What have you done in the Ardrí Group to protect your interests?
Well, I suppose, Bobby, we have a number of challenges with Brexit. One, a number of years ago, we set up Danger UK as a standalone company. So we have our own manufacturing plant in China that's run by my brother, John Fitzgibbon. So we import the goods direct from China into the UK and Ireland. In the UK, RMD, Mike O'Toole, the last number of years, we've invested very heavily in fire certification. And all of that is done and as UK standard. So in the last 6 months, we have a team of people working on getting dual certification for the European market. And that's a lot of expense to the company. And again, I suppose people don't see. In Ireland, then, we have a very successful brand, Henley Stoves, where we're exporting to the UK to about 60 retailers. And we have daily orders going out from our distribution centre in Tralee and Dublin. And what we found that is that at the moment we can get a product to the UK within 3 to 4 working days. Now, with Brexit, the challenge is that we have two members of the team currently being trained on export to facilitate for customs clearances. And on that, then, from talking to our partners, our hardest companies, they're saying the difficulty is that it could take 10 to 12 days to get our product into the UK. So that's going to be a challenge for us.
So the trick, as I'm hearing you there, is to try and, I suppose, be self-sufficient in each of your jurisdictions so that the less travel, I suppose, between Ireland and the UK, if you can get it in directly into the UK, you do that. So that's very interesting.
You do.
That's very interesting.
But in saying that, then that's you're losing jobs in Ireland when you do that.
Sure.
Like we are very supportive in our distribution centres in Ireland. We're just saying that how can we get clarity on sending the goods from Ireland?
Let's talk to our second guest, Ashley McCullough from McCullough Ireland Limited, 2019 EOI Files. Good morning to you, Ashley. How are you?
Good morning, Bobby. I'm very well this morning.
Now, you're in the logistics cold storage business, very interesting business, and second generation. Again, you're in the eye of the storm here, Ashley. I'd like to maybe tell me about what you're doing in your business to safeguard your future around Brexit.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Bobby. Yeah, we're over 50 years in the business of mainly temperature control distribution in the food industry.
Right.
The biggest thing that we had to do was first sort of model our customers' profile of work through the potential constraints that Brexit are going to put out there, and then see what work streams would still be available to us. That really showed us that there's going to be a need for a very tight relationship between the traders, the transport operators, and customs agents.
Yeah.
So on the back of that there, we decided we would open our own independent customs clearance brokerage service and have already got 40 members of staff in training for that.
Wow.
Not only that, we've seen it's going to be, you needed to have a depot in Northern Ireland for the Northern Ireland Protocol. You needed to have a depot in Dublin for it to be in Europe. And you needed to have a depot in mainland England, basically to divide your trucks up to ensure that you're in causing the least amount of cost to the with customs clearance and vendor certificates.
I think one of the things you've pointed out, Ashley, is that people are now conscious and aware, you know, of the difficulty of transporting something from A to B. I think it's maybe something we took for granted as a consumer. But now, you know, people are seeing the real challenges around logistics and the difficult job you do.
Absolutely. Firstly, the COVID has actually brought that to the forefront to a lot of people of the work that the haulage industry and logistics industry do. but the utilization of the vehicles and the slick system that currently goes on in the background is going to slow down dramatically with Brexit.
Right.
With the likes of the health certificates, for existence example, you have to have your health certificate produced 24 hours before heading to the port. To create your health certificate, you need to have the registration and trailer number on that certificate. So that takes the whole flexibility of the logistics industry away,
okay,
where we could change what lorry we send to what area. Instead, we have to pre-lock it in stone 24 hours before.
Okay, let's get, and that's very interesting as well, Ashley. Thanks very much for that. I want to talk as well now to Simon McAllister. He leads the internal and EY client response to the UK's departure from the EU. So he's something of a Brexit expert. Simon, I've spoken to you before. I was reading, I think it was update edition 19 of your Brexit update. It seems to be changing by the hour. But I read in today's Irish Times that Phil Hogan is saying that we're going to get a deal. What do you make of that?
Yeah, well, it certainly is changing a lot, and I think no better person in terms of the judgment in Brussels as to what's happening than Phil Hogan. Last week, there was an awful lot of talking and a lot of posturing on both sides, and I think it was probably necessary posturing. You know, in previous weeks, we've probably seen the EU call the UK's bluff, but this time it was the EU who've now probably agreed to some of the UK's demands. That does suit them because they do want to get a deal as well. So talks are going to continue this weekend in London. They're going to move to Brussels next week, and they're basically going to work every day and every weekend, they've said, until they get a deal. So there's positive noise is now finally coming from both sides. And I think probably for the first time in about 3 or 4 months, I'm feeling a little bit closer to Phil Hogan's view that a deal is probably now more likely than not, which was probably the reverse up until now.
Both parties played a fairly risky high stakes game, didn't they? By going for, you know, leaving big ticket items till the end and all, like, so that's kind of come back to haunt both of them, has it not?
Yeah, it was high stakes, I think, and it led to this risk that there could have been no deal by accident, as people were calling it. So basically that the talks would have drifted on and just, you know, timed out and gotten to the end of the year without an agreement. I think what last week has done has maybe just brought things to a head enough that it has brought enough progress on both sides, or at least cleared the pitch for progress on both sides, because they'll still need, both of them ultimately will still need to move. So the EU has got to move on fish. The UK has got to move on the level playing field and the sort of subsidy issues. The UK will have to remove the clauses on the internal markets bill that they are trying to bring into law. And then they have all the practical work on the agreement itself, and all that legal text will take time as well.
Yeah, you talked, I think you gave a sporting analogy of the UK's position. You said Gary O'Reilly, 42, of Piemont FC's second team, has given Real Madrid until next Thursday to outline transfer terms, or he'll refuse to sign with them. That's the sort of stuff that was going on.
It was difficult to keep track of, you know, the sort of points they were putting across to each other. And a lot of it was posturing from both sides, but you know, I think it ultimately was necessary to try and bring this thing to a head. Some of the leaders' interventions that they had in the weeks before that with Prime Minister Johnson and von der Leyen, they hadn't progressed things. Merkel and Macron had been starting to get involved, they hadn't progressed things. So ultimately, you know, even though there was a lot of noise in the last week or two, it has, I think, started to move things on, and it probably has brought them to a point where they do now feel like a deal is probably more likely than not, and maybe hence back to Phil Hogan's comments this morning.
I hope you heard our our other guests there, Ashley, and indeed Paul, talking about what they've done, and two businesses there, one based in Kerry, one based in Northern Ireland, but two businesses who've really been proactive around, you know, catching this Brexit thing, whichever way it bounces, because there's still a lot of uncertainty there. So what's your big message today, Simon, for businesses on both sides of the Irish border? What should they and can they be doing as we run into the final furlong here?
Yeah, look, I mean, two businesses with you know, great examples of the sort of impact both in you know, export and in logistics. I think they've done exactly the right thing, which is they've done something. Now, they may end up, both of them in January, realising we need to adjust this or we need to change it. And that's absolutely fine. But at least they're starting from a good position. So there is only 68 days left to go. So the key message would be that in previous deadlines, people have taken the chance, a calculated chance to do nothing, and that it'll be sort of, it'll be all right on the night. That will not be the case this time. So there is a lot of uncertainty, as you say, but there is things we know and there is things people can plan for, and they should immediately start to do those and put them into place.
Yeah, we can get complacent with false dawns. Very sage advice there from Simon McAllister. He's the EY Brexit lead. Also, a big thanks to Paul Fitzgibbon there from the Ardrí Group, and indeed Ashley McCullough from McCullough Ireland Limited. Wishing you both every success with Brexit. But it sounds like you're in a good place and you've done what you should have done.